listening to Xavier Davis. And the new album is called The Great Migration. So the tune is The Great Migration. The album is Rise Up Detroit. It's a 2018 release from the Detroit Music Factory. And I have with me Maria Schneider, as promised. Now, I have to give full disclosure. Maria is telling me she's a little bit under the weather, so we may not keep her that long. We'll see how long she survives this interview. It's a pleasure to welcome you to WPKN, particularly given that you're not feeling well today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So we're excited to talk to you. I'm quite honored. You know, you are both a band leader and a composer in really a field that doesn't have a lot of female conductors. And so I wanted to ask you the question, I mean, how did you go from being a Minnesota farm girl, in a sense, all the way to where you are today? I mean, it's fascinating.
Well, you know, I guess it was a slow process of, I never set a goal to do what I'm doing. It was just, there were influences along the way. I was fortunate to have a great piano teacher who had been from Chicago, Stride and Classical, and the only reason she ended up in this little farm town was that her husband and son both died within a month, and her only living family was a daughter who had married a chiropractor in Windham. So that brought, devastation brought her to Windham, but she was a phenomenal musician. And then, I went to college studying theory and then started studying classical composition. But I was listening to so much jazz and my music started getting influenced by it. And so my composition teacher, who was a Hindemith student and very much a classical guy, said, I really think you should go watch the big band rehearse and write something for them. And that kind of set me on the path. It's something I started, and I guess I never stopped.
You know, I have to say that, I mean, first, your music is beautiful, and all of it, and I've been a fan of yours for decades. But, the question is, it's a very different thing. It's really a big animal to move a big band around. And, it seems like, to me, kind of a courageous, brave sort of thing to try and do in a world where big bands are not really, this is not Duke Ellington's, decades, right? This is, this is 2018. So when you travel, are you actually moving all of those people around? Do they all travel with you all the time, or how does that work?
Not all the time, sometimes. We just played in Ireland, and I just finished working with a group in Seattle, the Seattle Repertory Jazz Orchestra. Before that, I was working with the Brussels Jazz Orchestra in Europe doing concerts, and before that, working with students in Switzerland. So a lot of times I guest conduct people on my music, and then sometimes I bring my band out on a tour. But it's very expensive, and it's really a lot of work, and it was interesting when I was in college at the University of Minnesota and I was just dabbling in writing, music for big band. I went to a concert at, it was called Orchestra Hall. It is called Orchestra Hall in Minneapolis. It's where there's, their Minnesota Orchestra performs. But they had some sort of concert series and Toshiko Akiyoshi
was my goodness.
Playing.
Wow.
And she was with her L.A. band. So this is years ago. This is like probably 1982 or something like that. And there was something about seeing this person performing that kind of music in a classical concert hall. And when I saw that, I said, wow, I wonder if I can do that. And it wasn't the fact that she was a woman. I'm sure subliminally that was something, we all, when we see someone who's like ourselves doing something, it gives us permission and the power to see ourselves in that way too. But more than her being a woman, it was just that somebody doing jazz can be presenting their music in a classical concert hall. And that really had an impact on me, because before that I was thinking, what am I doing writing for big band, you know, and why and where is this going, you know, and I didn't realize that the world is really open for that as concert music.
Yeah, I mean, I have to imagine that, I mean, not to only talk about the space and the size of your band, but I mean, even at the Jazz Standard, I go there once a week just about, and I, you know, to picture 17 people squeezing onto that little stage, I'm interested to see how you're going to pull it off, really.
It's pretty tight. We have to pull out the first row of tables, and then the saxophones are on the floor, and it's pretty squished in there, but it's fun. It's really, it's fun to play sometimes in a tight space with the audience right in front of you, because you, the band plays in a certain way when it feels the audience. I mean, there's, I remember in college one time in some sort of ethnomusicology class or something, talking about, the teacher talking about the relationship between the audience and the players, and I remember thinking, this is such a sort of, you know, I don't know, ephemeral topic, and I just kind of felt like it was kind of a useless conversation. But now that I perform a lot, I know how much, especially in jazz, the audience affects the performing musicians. You know, they really feed off of them, so much so that when I'm in a concert hall, I often will tell them to make sure to keep the lights a little bit up in the audience, mm-hmm. so that my band can see the faces, because they play better when that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra has kind of broken the barrier a little bit. I mean, they're definitely taking jazz back into that direction of, you know, people will sit in a concert hall and listen to a big band perform, right? And I also saw Ryan Truesdell. Do you know his music?
Of course.
Yeah.
I know Ryan. I was the one who connected him with the Gil Evans family for all his Gil Evans projects.
And I have to talk to you about Gil Evans, but what I was going to mention was that, I remember sitting in there, and of course, you know, I've seen lots of jazz, but there was a lot of people in the audience I don't think had really seen a big band like that perform, mm-hmm. and the conducting that was going on, it's really very dramatic, you know? It really adds a...
Fun.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think that people don't, you know, I mean, there's always that joke about, like, if the conductor didn't move their baton, what would actually happen, you know, kind of thing, you know. And, of course, we, you know, anyone who has, you know, been involved with music would understand, of course, that that's a big deal of what you're doing, right? Because you couldn't keep them all, I mean, I'm assuming you would say, right, you couldn't keep them all together unless you were up there, you know, sort of guiding them.
It depends what they were playing. There's certain pieces they could play and they'd be fine, and certain ones that they wouldn't. But, you know, I see my role not just keeping them together, but trying to show them expressive elements, so keeping the music focused and graceful or impactful or whatever it is, because those players, they're behind their horns, and, for instance, the trumpet players in the back of the band, they're not really hearing the reeds very well. So they don't have the big picture. So as a conductor, I'm the one hearing the balance and everything in front, so I indicate, you know, when I want them softer, smoother, louder, whatever, you know.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a big aspect of it. And, you know, I wanted to ask you, I mean, among other things, you're one of your, I mean, besides all your awards and all your albums, I mean, you worked with Gil Evans, didn't you? And I would love to hear what that was like, because I know really, except for his music, I know very little about him personally. What was he like to work with?
A little bit like Yoda. You know? He was very wise and wonderful and mystical and funny and sweet. And really, it was really just, I was very lucky to get to have a little window into his world for 3 years and until he died. And he was an amazing, amazing person, and I got to experience, because I was helping him work on his music and things, so I got to see some of the quirky things that he did that were very unorthodox. And, you know, one school of thought would say, this isn't right, this doesn't work, but seeing how somebody who's committed to a voice and a path in music can make something so effective and so unique, and he was like that. His writing was pretty unorthodox and pretty amazing, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, of course, we're all fans of his work with Miles Davis, and you know, the idea that you possibly could have put an album like that out, even with someone at Miles Davis level, that was going to be so different from, I mean, really anything else at that time. I mean, it was really quite something.
Well, that music was what really attracted me to do what I do, because it was a combination of improvisation and real jazz, but mixed with all those things that we find in classical music, the nuance, the grace, the beauty, the transparency. It wasn't just screaming big band, romping big band in your face, you know, and it really made me say, oh, wow, you know, this is inspirational to me.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, as much as I think of your music as jazz, if somebody twisted my arm, I could make the case that there's enough classical music in it that, I mean, and, you know, I'm assuming that that's your motivation, right? That you want to bring those two sounds together into something that is quite different.
It's not really something I set out to do. It's just there because I think that's part of me. And so it's all kind of in my palette. And, you know, I've never considered myself really to be, I've never been so concerned with being in the jazz tradition and standing on the shoulders of such and such people. And, you know, there are many people that are, that's their approach. And for me, I feel like I'm just making music that's influenced by the different things that I guess I love, but also things I love in life, not just music. And so everything kind of comes in and is fair game. You know, I'm not following some trajectory of a tradition.
And so I read that you are a bird watcher. Is this right? Yes. Is that a hobby? Is that something you take pretty seriously? Where does that fall in your, you know?
Well, I would say a hobby. It's something I loved, actually. I'm sure if when I was a kid, if I hadn't fallen in love with music, I'm sure I would have ended up studying ornithology. Because that was really, I really wanted that when I was young. I was really into birds and it's never left me, you know. So the impact that, and I knew pretty early on then when I did music that I loved music that much. You know, In life I think I was blessed with knowing my passions early on and they never stopped. So, but music kind of took over, but I still do go bird watching and I'm part of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology Board of Directors, so I'm involved a little bit in that world, and it's deeply important to me, and yeah, it inspires a lot of my music, has birds coming into the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you live in New York City, or are you...
I do. I'm on the Upper West Side.
Nice. And so, is Central Park your go-to place now for bird watching?
Or you absolutely. Have to, yeah. Apparently, you know, there's this Mandarin duck in the park. Have you heard about this duck?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so I just got back from Seattle, and that's one of the reasons I'm really bummed to be sick today, because I wanted to go over to the park and see this bird. But yeah, I go birding in Central Park during migration. It's just, it's amazing the number of species of birds that you see, and there's also just a wonderful camaraderie between birders in the park. So it's a wonderful thing, and it's a good way to get the noise of the city,
yes,
and the pressure of a career and all these things, kind of just shed them and look up into the trees and look at a little bird and just think, oh my gosh, you just flew all the way up from Peru. How did you do that?
Yeah.
How do you navigate? Where are you going? Look at your feathers. Listen to your song. You know, and it's so wonderful when I get lost in that world. It makes me realize that all the day-to-day things I stress about don't matter so much. That this is really something extraordinary and miraculous.
No, I think that's right. And, you know, for me, Central Park, when I'm in the middle of it, I do not feel like I'm in New York City. I feel like I am really in, you know, quote, I mean, maybe the wilderness might be too much.
Yeah, there are spots, especially in the north, where honestly, you can fool yourself into thinking you're in a national forest or something.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to imagine living in New York City and having grown up in Minnesota on a farm, that this is really foreign to you to be living there.
Well, I didn't live on a farm, but I was on the outskirts of town. It might as well have been a farm. It was kind of on the edge. But But, you know, New York has certain things in common with a small town. Like, in a small town, you know everybody who works in the shops. You can walk everywhere. And it's the same thing in Manhattan. You know, your neighborhood becomes your neighborhood, and you have your little stores, less and less of the family stores, but there still are some, thankfully, where you get to know the people that own it and work there. And that, to me, feels actually more like a small town, this city, than most other cities I've been in for that reason.
No, I think that's right. That's the neighborhood feeling of New York City. So before I let you go, because I want to talk a little bit about the Jazz Standard, and I just wanted to ask you, though, I went to Spotify, because I have a lot of your music, but I don't have all of it. And I was kind of, and of course, you're not there, are you?
No.
No. And there's a reason for that, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Let's hear about that.
Well, I could go on and on about YouTube and Spotify and these companies, but, you know, when I make my recordings are in the six figures, and not just barely in the six figures, way into the six figures, you know, $200,000. So it can be so much money to make a recording. And on Spotify, 90% of the music gets only 1% of the financial pie. And in that 90% is all their classical music, all their jazz, all their folk, all their world, tons of the pop and rock and that, too, is things that aren't super popular, things that are sort of on the fringe. And so, you know, I know people that are getting checks, you know, for $1.50 or ridiculous amounts of money. I don't know what the lower limit is they pay, but it's nothing, you know, it's ridiculous. And so I would never give my music away for free like that, because if everybody can just hear it for basically nothing, then I'd have to stop making records.
So. And we would hate that, so let's not have that happen. So you are going to be, hopefully you'll be feeling better. You have a couple of weeks to recover. Going to be at the Jazz Standard on Tuesday, November 20th, and Wednesday, November
week.
And then I'm guessing that you're headed off for hopefully a Thanksgiving holiday of some kind?
Thursday is off. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we play again. So, yeah.
So I will tell our listeners that these tickets are very hard to come by, and because they're all expecting, Maria, that I'm going to give tickets away to your show. And I'm not going to be able to do that, because it's such a popular show that the Jazz Standard could not give me tickets for it. But I have Javon Jackson that I will be giving tickets away for later on. I wanted to thank you so much, particularly given that you weren't feeling well today, for your time. I will be at one of your shows, looking forward to it, like I can't begin to tell you.
Well, please introduce yourself to me. And yeah, I hope if people want to come, make your reservations early. And yeah, they have wonderful food. And it's kind of like a reunion every year. I mean, many, many people do this every year with their families. It's just kind of a thing. And so it's a lot of fun.
I can't wait. And so thank you again, Maria Schneider, who is an award-winning conductor and composer. And she will be at the Jazz Standard on November 20th and 21st, and then a couple of days after Thanksgiving. Thank you again, Maria.
And thank you.
And here is Maria's music.
Thank you. ask. Thank you. start a fire, watch it grow. In the end, only reap what we sow, we sow, we sow. And here's the empty bed in which I'll lie, fashioned by my scheming mind. I thought, now it's your turn to cry. The thing I most loved, I've just watched die. Oh, regret, the lonely stepchild of revenge. Hide your cards and place your bets. Some things once broken never mend. They cannot mend or revenge. Start a fire, watch it grow. In the end, can you reap a woe so? Justify the end, the end, the end.
You are listening to listener-supported WPKN in Bridgeport, Connecticut, 89.5 FM. Lisa Sahulka with you until 4. Many, many, many thanks to Maria Schneider, who is going to be at the Jazz Standard the week of Thanksgiving and thereafter, for the wonderful interview, particularly given that she was a little bit under the weather today. We heard Kate McGarry in that set, Losing Strategy Number 4. And the disc is called The Subject Tonight Is Love. It's a 2018 release. And we had Gilad Hexelman with the John Coltrane tune, Countdown, and that's an album called Words Unspoken, a 2008 release for Gilad Hexelman, and a brand new one. Absolutely stunning, right? It's Ambrose Akimursuri, and it's called Free, White, and 21. It's from a new album. It's called Origami Harvest on the Blue Note record label. Ambrose Akimursuri. And Wayne Horvitz. I will be interviewing Wayne Horvitz next week. He will be at Roulette, and I'll be giving tickets away. And I'll also be giving tickets away for Javon Jackson in just a little while, so hang on for that. He's going to be at the Old Lyme Side Door Jazz. And so we heard Wayne Horvitz, No Blood Relations, number 2, from the album The Snow Ghost Sessions. No Blood Relation number 2. And we had, from All My Relations, this is a Charles Lloyd album, Little Piece off of that. It's a 1995 release for Charles Lloyd on the sax work there. And we started off with Maria Schneider's work. It's called Walking by Flashlight from the Thompson Fields, a 2015 release for Maria Schneider. We are all caught up here at your radio station, and we continue here with Thelonious Monk.
Is Eve screaming next to me? Who's beaming? Monk was stomping. Suddenly a monk heard, and then they got into something. Oscar played the mean sax. Mr. Byers blew a mean axe. Monk was stomping. Suddenly a monk heard, and then the joint started jumping. Every hip stood, Billy Duckford canceled it all. Taking that note, nobody wrote, putting it down. Oh, beam screaming next to Dizzy, who was beaming, mom was thumping, early and woke, and then they got into something.